Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I've got the rare privilege of visiting with Jan Caron, who is finishing up or has finished up and is now talking about and traveling about the last of the Mitford series, Light from Heaven. She'll be in Raleigh in an event at the McKimmon Center hosted by Quail Ridge Books on this Monday. And Jan, gosh, I can't believe I get to talk to you. You know, you're...
Well, I can't believe I get to talk to you, DG.
Well, we have followed each other around. Or you probably don't know this, but I came to Charlotte right after you did. And then after you left in the mid-1980s and came up to Raleigh-Durham to work in an advertising agency, not long after that, I came to work for the university. Then you moved up to Blowing Rock. And I felt like you were kind of following me around at that point, because when I was practicing law for a guy named Marcus Hickman, who grew up in a little place called Hudson, North Carolina. I don't know whether you ever heard of that. But
Marcus Hickman in Hudson? Yeah, well, that goes all the way back to my childhood, all the way back to when I was in school, in the first few grades in Hudson School.
Well, in any event, he was mighty proud of that connection. And he, because of that mountain foothills connections, he was friends with the Robbins family and had, and was the lawyer for that, for all of those enterprises. And so we spent a lot of time going up to Hound Ears and Blowing Rock and Tweetsie and all of those places. So I feel like I've been in the same places that you have.
Beautiful places.
Jan, tell us, you know, tell us the story of how Father Tim came to be and how that coincided with your life, and particularly your life in Blue and Rock, and how all that intersects. You must have told the story 1,000 times.
Well, I have, but I enjoy telling it. I left advertising when I was 48 years old, mainstream advertising, I should say, and I knew that if I didn't get on with it, I would never be able to live the dream. In fact, it really was more than a dream. It was a calling, and is a calling. At the age of 10, I had a certain knowledge, a very sure, deep knowledge, that I was being called by God to be an author, I was meant to write books. But, of course, I didn't know how to do that. I did write one at the age of 10. It was very, very bad and filled with adjectives, because publishers were then paying 5 cents a word.
Right. Well, some good publishers. I'm used to writing for a penny a word.
Right.
But now, we talked about where you were growing up. Was this up in Caldwell County somewhere?
Yes, it was near Hudson, as a matter of fact. I got into advertising. I was quite a natural, I think, because I did love to write. And but at the age of 48, I knew that I was praying about it very ardently for 2 years, and God finally gave me the go-ahead. It took 2 years to get that go-ahead. I was pretty frightened.
Now, this was while you were in Raleigh working
in
advertising, so you were struggling to make a living doing doing a good job writing copy and doing all the kind of great things that I heard you do to promote things, including your own books.
Of the most wonderful accounts I ever worked on was the North Carolina Travel and Tourism account. But in any case, I left Raleigh and went to Blowing Rock and cut my lifestyle in half and traded my Mercedes for a beat-up Toyota with rust on the fenders. I can assure you that it caused me much humility, which was good for me.
Well, it would be good for... But, Jan, were you making good money in advertising?
I was making good money for a woman in that time period. Yes, I was.
And
I was working very, very hard. But, I wanted to follow that dream. I just had to do, it was, like write a book or bust.
a lot of us have this, but why Blowing Rock?
I beg your pardon?
Why Blowing Rock?
Well, because, first of all, I had family there. My brother, Barry, and my beautiful sister-in-law still live there.
Now, this is Barry Schwitzer?
Barry Setzer. And his wife,
and they're
Bonnie.
Still there.
Oh, yes, they love it very much.
So
Blowing Rock was beautiful, and it was accessible. I mean, you could actually drive there within the confines of a day. And but I thought, everybody who lives in Blowing Rock is rich, because it's a resort town, so surely I can't make it there. But I found a wonderful little cottage and painted it pink, as a matter of fact, shocking all the neighbors, and settled in to write a book, and then found that I had nothing to say. nothing to say.
Well, now, you'd got this feeling that you were called to write, but
yes.
then you, it was kind of like God telling Abraham to move, and then he got there and he didn't know exactly what to do at first. So you got there, but were not quite sure, and knew you were supposed to write, but not quite sure what to write.
Well, I tried to write a book about a woman who moved to the mountains of North Carolina and opened an inn, but I couldn't make the characters get up off the page and walk around and have life. It was a very distressing time, and I sort of my dream turned to nightmare, you might say, but I continued to pray, and God spoke to my heart and just said, you know, don't look back. Keep moving. I'm with you. Don't look back. And so I really didn't. And one night lying in bed, and this is where this story ends, one night lying in bed, I had a simple mental image of a priest walking down a village street. I knew it was an Episcopal priest and not a Catholic priest.
Hell, wow.
Because of the collar, actually, but
really?
They wear their collars differently.
You're kidding. Well, we'll have to do, I'll have to get into that in a minute, but keep going.
Well, I got up and started writing. It doesn't sound very inspiring, but it inspired me. I felt like God had his hand on this. At last, God had his hand on what the material he wanted me to write. And so I wrote a couple of chapters, and I took it over to my friend Jerry Burns at the Blowing Rocket newspaper. Don't you love that name?
I love the name, and I'm familiar with the Blowing Rocket.
Yes, it's a wonderful newspaper. And he said, well, you know, I don't know. I said, Jerry, what am I doing here? What is this? Anyway, I never written anything like this. He said, I'm not sure exactly, but I sure do like it. Why don't we run it in the newspaper every week? So suddenly I was a weekly columnist, and I had to produce a column every week. And that's how At Home in Mitford got written. And not unlike Mr. Charles Dickens, you know, he published in installments as well.
No, Jan, as I've reviewed your story, I realized immediately that this is what 150 years ago might have been, you know, quite a regular, ordinary kind of thing.
Yes, it was.
But in modern times, the kinds of fiction that is serialized, it's very rare that you see fiction serialized in newspapers or now even in magazines.
Yeah,
it just doesn't happen
almost
anymore.
Almost never. Yes.
Only in Blowing Rock.
That's right.
What a great, fortunate connective link. This would have to be one of the crucial kind of, in trying to figure out where are the crucial things that happened.
Well, it was crucial because I don't know that I would have really had the courage and the perseverance to continue writing against so many odds that I faced there. First of all, I was trying to freelance in advertising, and I had made a good reputation for myself across the country. But advertising went into a sort of downward spiral because we had a terrific economic slowdown in the country. And so they weren't hiring freelancers. And so I was, you know, suffering economically and trying to write this book every week for the Blowing Rocket for no compensation, which was great. They gave me a copy of the newspaper as compensation.
Well, Jen, I have to tell you, I write a little weekly column, and I think it's great. It really isn't much good, but a lot of papers print it. But the editors, and it's, you know, just for fun, and the editor, one of my editors said, you got a bargain, DG, because we really should be charging you to print this column. I mean, you know, it is. I mean, they give you the space. It is. You get the chance. And it worked out to be, of course, for you, the Blowing Rocket's printing weekly serialization of this story worked out
well,
to be a great thing.
Well, it's a wonderful demonstration of connectedness. I connected with Jerry Burns. I couldn't have connected with the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune or the San Francisco, whatever it is, Chronicle, I think. But I could connect, and he could connect with me because it was a little small-town newspaper published once a week, cost a dime at that time, one dime. And that's what small towns are all about, connectedness. And that's what my books are all about, connectedness. People connecting, circumstances connecting, and people like that. They feel at home when they read my books.
Well, Jan, there's so much to concentrate on, but I love this story about getting started and about the idea of writing it every week, and wonder if you could take your mind back into those times and think about what it was like every week to sit down and to advance the story a little bit, you know, week by week, and whether how much you were influenced by who you ran into in the grocery store, at church, or at some meetings or things like that.
I'm always influenced by who I run into at the grocery store or who I meet at church. I mean, everyone I meet, in a sense, influences who I am and the writer in me. I never miss an I try never to miss an expression. I'm in a hotel now where we're having this interview, and they brought my breakfast this morning. And here was this lovely, lovely man from Haiti, and we connected. You know, I'd flown over his island once. I'd never really been there. But such a dear, sweet man. Just, you know, that it was just a fleeting moment of connectedness. And you can have that anywhere. People say, oh, I wish I lived in Medford, or is Medford real? Well, yes, it's real, and you can live in Medford if you'll just give yourself the freedom and the joy of connecting with other
people. Oh, Jan, that's so great. Let's just take a real quick break. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking to Jan Caron, best-selling author of the Medford series, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jan Caron, a best-selling author of the Medford series, who is in Raleigh on Monday night at an event beginning at 7:30 at the McKimmon Center, promoting her latest book, Light from Heaven. I'm trying maybe too hard to force you back into that first week of giving Jerry Burns, the editor of the Blowing Rock Rocket, this first little package with your first bit about Father Tim. I mean, can he's saying, I'm going to publish this. And then he said, I want something for next week. And how did you do it?
Well, I was, again, struggling to make an income through freelance writing for advertising, though advertising was at peril during that economic crisis we had at that time in history. So it gave me really something to divert my mind from trying to pay the mortgage. and I enjoyed it, but I also felt that I was writing in a vacuum. You know, I was accustomed to feedback in advertising.
Uh-huh.
You write an ad, you take the copy, or people see it, you get comments back. Throw it in the wastebasket, let's start over. Or it's wonderful, let's run with it. Immediate feedback, always. But I was writing, and the only feedback I was getting was an occasional comment in the grocery store or at church. And it's hard to write a book. I'm used to it now. Of course, it comes with the territory. But to write a whole book, which it takes me now about 2 years, along with my very busy life, to produce a novel,
right,
manuscript.
Right.
And so you wait 2 years for feedback. And I'm at the point right now, as I step out into this tour for Light from Heaven, I'm beginning to get feedback, and it is so exciting. I mean, I've been waiting for 2 years for feedback.
You've been working on this book. Now, I will say, I'm going to come back to this installment way of working, but maybe we'll come back to that after a while. But let's do talk about your life today. And you are, I think, as we record this on the 9th of November, that this is the very first day after the book is officially released.
Yes.
And Light from Heaven. You've been working on it. You've, of course, gotten great feedback. I've talked to your editor, and she says you're the very best, that you don't really need much editing.
She's a wonderful friend and a marvelous editor. I'm very blessed to have her in my life.
Well, it sounds like it's a great blessing for both of you, both a friendship and a terrific professional relationship. But you write it. You know that you've got the approval of the close professionals who are working with you. But I guess you do wonder. You've got this record of success, and now this what has been announced to be the last book in the series. It'd be terrible if it were a flop, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, it would.
Of course, we know it's not going to be.
Well, there's an interesting challenge that comes with a series, and that is to make each book, if you can, better than the last. you have to keep coming up higher with a series or you're doomed. Sometimes a series will take off with a great burst of energy and then it'll fall down by book two or three, pick up again maybe in four, and start to slide again in five or six. I mean, the duration of a series, especially nine books, requires a certain emotional stamina that has to be maintained.
I can imagine lots of difficulties, and I'm going to ask you about a couple of them, and if you can just refuse to answer if you want to. But, Jan, how many hundreds of characters? This is the eighth book in this series. How many hundreds of characters are in these books, and how do you keep them straight?
Well, that's a great question. I love that question. Actually, this is the ninth book in the series.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay.
I missed one.
There are more than 700 characters in these nine books. Well, more. My sister counted them a book past, and so we may be much nearer 800 characters. Now, you know, it's like, who do I think I am, Tolstoy or Dostoevsky?
Right, or Dickens.
Or
Charles Dickens is probably, he's probably up here in heaven somewhere saying, oh, if I could just be Jan Caron.
What an amusing thought.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, don't you think he's probably up there watching and saying, she's taking me one step.
Well, we do,
better.
Mr. Dickens and I do have something else in common other than that of having been published in installments, and that is our readerships are very similar.
Oh, really?
Whole families read our book. Mr. Dickens was very privileged to have whole families. I mean, the father would buy the installment, come home, and first of all, he would vet it to make sure there was nothing in there that was going to alarm the children or give them bad dreams. Then in the evening after dinner, they would assemble in the study or the library or wherever it might be, and he would read aloud to the whole family the new installment. Whole families read my books, and I get many mothers and daughters, many men read my books, many fathers. I was at an event last night, a wonderful event in New Jersey, and so many husbands and wives came, people who read my books aloud to each other, for example.
Right, well, we've heard, you must be inundated with these stories, and as I've circled around getting ready to talk to you, I've just found so many people who say that reading the book changed their lives. Then it somehow or another, their experience had not put them in touch, I guess, with the way of living that that they feel the books convey to them. That it's more than a story. It's kind of it's a bonding with a way of life that's maybe different or better or richer than the life that they're experiencing. And they say it's life-changing. I mean, that's got to be humbling for you, isn't it?
It is. I was thinking this morning, I was thinking back over last evening and the several hundred people who came through a reception line to greet me. I don't sign books at events anymore because that keeps my head down.
Carpal tunnel.
I've suffered with that now for 3 years. But I like to stand and greet people eye to eye, and we really, for the moment we have together, it is entirely theirs. It belongs entirely to them, entirely to us. And yes, people come to me weeping. They will come through the line weeping, telling me that my books have changed their lives. But, you know, let me make one thing perfectly clear. I don't know how to do that. I, Jan Caron, the author, do not know how to change people's lives, but God does. These are God's books. D.G., they're entirely his. They're dedicated to him, devoted to him, and I think come from him. So God is changing lives, not Jan Caron. Yeah. I am, and I'm not being cute and coy and overly modest. He's using me to write these books. I feel honored to have been appointed to write this Mitford series to console people.
Well, it is, you know, the evidence is in, and that the books are making that kind of life-changing experience. I think, you know, it's hard to, it's wonderful to give God credit for all of this, but I think, you know, I just think, how am I going to say? I don't want to challenge you on that at all, other than to say that when I just go back in the Bible and I think about Moses and even Aaron called and resisting and then accomplishing and leading that as instruments of God. Certainly they were, but there was also, you know, they had to go along all these stories. So you were, I mean, you know, you could have not done this.
Well, you still have to put your derriere in the chair.
It's kind of hard work still, isn't it?
It is very hard work. There's a lot of heaving and hauling in writing a book, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I want to say, that you can say I'm an instrument of God, but nevertheless, it's just like the – how am I going to make the analogy? Just like the horse behind the plow, the horse might be being guided by the farmer, but – that horse is working hard.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so, well, that's a good analogy, and it's agricultural, you know. I like that.
I'm sorry. I got no business trying to do this kind of stuff. I don't know. We're visiting, and this is D.G. Martin on Who's Talking, and we're visiting with Jan Caron. We're privileged to visit with Jan Caron, one of North Carolina's most famous citizens, certainly the most popular author. And Jan, there can be no question in terms of author whose books absolutely change lives. We may have arguments about all kinds of things, about who the best writer in North Carolina is. I mean, we might have differences of opinion about this, but the one who's turned more lives upside down, would there be any argument about that these days? You don't have to make that judgment.
I know.
That's my judgment. That's not fair to ask you to do that. But it leads me to a place I'd love for you to talk about, and I don't want to just hit you with a bunch of questions. But here, can I just set this up a little bit?
Yes.
The people in North Carolina are so proud of the connection with the Midford series, with Blowing Rock, with Jan Caron's. You know, growing up in North Carolina, being a part of North Carolina, choosing North Carolina, and now, Jan, for good reasons, you know, for good reasons, has had to leave Blowing Rock, where she was surrounded by, you know, admirers and hard for to work, and now the Midford series is coming to a close. Is your heart still in North Carolina? Can you talk about that a little
bit? I love my home state. It helped form and shape me. I love the landscape. I love the Piedmont. I love the mountains. I love the shore, the outer islands. I love everything about it. I talk like a North Carolinian.
You do that.
So I live in Virginia now. You know, everybody knows where I'm from because when I open my mouth, it's very evident. No, I don't talk like they do in Virginia. Virginia has a very soft speech. They say, can I do anything for you? I just love that.
I do too. You don't live in the Tidewater, do you? It reaches up, doesn't it?
Yes. But I'm very proud of my home state, and I still go back and will always go back. But, you know, it was circumstances. In Blowing Rock, I lived right on the street. I was very vulnerable to a parade of people who wanted to knock on my door and get me to sign their books, and all of that's good, but you see, my private life was no longer private. And so I tried to find a farm in the mountains of North Carolina, and it just didn't happen. And so I found a beautiful spot in Virginia where I raise a few sheep and have chickens, get fresh eggs out of the nest every day.
Oh, Jan, that's so great. Let's just take a real quick break. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking to Jan Caron, best-selling author of the Midford series, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jan Caron, best-selling author of the Midford series, who is in Raleigh on Monday night at an event beginning at 7:30 at the McKimmon Center, promoting her latest book, Light from Heaven. Well, I've got a feeling, talking about people who make a difference in other people's lives, I want to talk about some of the people that I think have made a difference in your life and maybe get you to talk about others. You've mentioned one that appeals to me a lot, and that's Jerry Burns, the editor of the Blowing Rocket.
The Blowing Rocket,
newspaper. Another person whom I think you know, or everybody knows, I'm kind of in love with Nancy Olson. I just think she's one of the finest people I've ever met. And I wonder, I've read that Nancy's sort of, you know, she's always connecting us with people we need to know.
Yes, she is.
And she helped you at an important time in your life, didn't she?
Yes.
Could you tell us that story?
I was writing the third book, These High Green Hills, and had my contract with a very small Christian publisher who, I'm sorry to say, had almost no distribution. I was writing the books and working very hard to make them as wonderful as I knew how, and yet there was no way to really get them out there into the hands of readers. Nancy said, Nancy loves authors.
Now, how did you know? Nancy, of course, is the owner and wonderful operator of Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh and is sponsoring the event tonight at the McKimmon Center. But how did you even know Nancy Olson?
Well, Nancy was one of the first to champion my books. She read them in soft cover when they came out from the small publisher I was with, and she liked them very much and thought that they rang very true for our part of the country, and she did a couple of book events with me. And then she said, Jan, you know, you need an agent. Well, I said, Nancy, I've tried to find an agent, but I really don't know how to do that. It's like, how do you do that? She said, let me give you a couple of names. So I talked with three of her friends. She's made friends in very high circles in the publishing world, as she well might. They think highly of Nancy. She's one of the great independent booksellers in America and shown so many of us really how it can be done in face of great adversity, which, of course, was the chain stores coming online so many years ago.
Right.
But she hooked me up with Liz Durensoft. Liz and I spoke, and Liz is a very high-profile New York City literary agent. I never dreamed I would have such a person represent me. Liz liked the books. She took them over to Penguin, rather, where she talked to my editor, Carolyn Carlson, as we had mentioned earlier. And Carolyn is the daughter of a Lutheran minister in the Midwest. Carolyn read these books, got it immediately, just got it, and began to champion my books among her peers at the world's second-largest publishing house. Well, it was a hard sell, as you might imagine, but they've come around, and I must tell you that I have the best publisher in the whole wide world.
Well,
they are all so solidly behind Mitford. I can't tell you the wonderful and even gladsome response that I get from my publisher. I couldn't be happier.
Well, it's easy for me to understand why they're happy with you, not only because, as Carolyn said, you're so much fun to work with, but I think the fact that the books are pretty successful must open the door for some good relationships as well. It's a great thing. Carolyn told the story about it just gave a little insight into, you know, we're just a little country people down here in North Carolina. And the idea of the agent having, thanks to you and Nancy Olson's suggestion, you're in touch with an agent who liked your work. And instead of, instead of calling up the publisher and saying, here's something you've got to have, you've got to look at this. And, she invites Carolyn and another group of people over for a tea party regularly.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then as Carolyn is, after lots of socializing, having fun, talking about it, I'm sure they were gossiping and about things of the literary world. And then as she leaves, your agent, Liz, just says, yeah, here's a little book you ought to read, And so Carolyn
very low key
takes it home because everybody trusts each other. And takes it home, opens it up. And as you said, you're the person who's your editor now, in part because of her own experience as a PK, a preacher's kid, she just felt like you captured it. And then whammo.
Carolyn would send her mother copies of the books they were publishing at Penguin, because all the editors get to send free copies to friends just to get the word out there. And her mother once said, Carolyn, dear, don't you all publish any nice books? And that's another thing I think that influenced Carolyn when she read
my book. She wanted to publish a nice book. Well, we want to publish a nice book if it'll sell.
And, right.
And, you know, there's this word out in the country that it's only the things that push you to the edge of everything, you know, that sell. You've helped push people in a different direction. I would just say that Carolyn has got to be one of the key figures in your life as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely key. Yes, indeed.
I wondered, and maybe I couldn't, when I talked to her the other day, I couldn't get as far as I wanted to into this, but her father was a Lutheran minister, or is a Lutheran minister, in Brooklyn.
Was in Brooklyn. Now they live in Minneapolis.
They've gone back to the Midwest. Now, maybe, you know, in Minneapolis, I can see the sort of the Garrison Keillor, Lake Wobegon Lutheran, you know, small town pastor having all of these similar problems of, situations, Father Tim, but in Brooklyn? I mean, Brooklyn is, you know, metropolitan. I mean, it's a different world from Blowing Rock, isn't it? Wow.
Not really. I mean, I have to tell you, I think that's the mistake most people make.
Oh, good.
It's like there can't be a Mitford in New York City or Manhattan. There can't be a Mitford in L.A. There are Mitfords everywhere. And I'm not just saying this, again, to be cute or sly. There are Mitfords everywhere. It is absolutely everywhere I know because I've traveled everywhere on many book tours. And I meet Mitford everywhere I go. Well, there was Mitford in that building last night. A wonderful demonstration of connectedness. The people there, that audience was so connected, and I was so connected to them. It was just a very uplifting, renewing kind of experience. If you keep your eyes open, if you keep your ears open, and especially if you keep your heart open, you can find Mitford everywhere. Mitford is portable. You can take it with you.
All right. Now, I'm talking to Jan Caron. Jan Caron will be visiting in this area tonight at the McKimmon Center, hosted by Quail Ridge Books. And I hope you ought to be there. Just stop what you're doing and go right now. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking to Jan Caron, best-selling author of the Mitford series, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jan Caron, best-selling author of the Mitford series, who is in Raleigh on Monday night at an event beginning at 7:30 at the McKimmon Center, promoting her latest book, Light from Heaven. And this is this book which you are promoting now, Light from Heaven, is the last of the Mitford series.
Yes, the ninth and last novel in that series.
And it marks the conclusion of, you know, a long series of books, which although Mitford may be portable, it started out and really is Blowing Rock, North Carolina, and as close as you could get to it. And you're closing a chapter not only of a book series, but in your life, aren't you? I mean, aren't you leaving behind a solid rock of you know, not guaranteed success, but this is how does it feel to be kind of launching out on something different?
Well, it feels wonderful. And I must tell you that I really do believe that timing is everything. And the timing for saying goodbye to Mitford was perfect. I'm not lonely for it. I'm not going to miss it because I left it at just the right time. I had said everything I had to say. I had told my readers and shared with them everything I had to share. I had no more vision of Mitford. The story had a beginning, and the story has a natural, very natural ending. Now, speaking of connectedness, we're going to remain connected to Mitford in this way. I'm writing a new series beginning. The first book will be out in the fall of 2007, and they're called, these three books will be called the Father Tim novels. Now, Agatha Christie wrote 40 novels about Hercule Poirot, although she stated very candidly that she didn't even like this character. I like my character, Father Tim. He's romantic, he's fun, or he can be fun. He's much more fun since he met Cynthia, I must say. He has a romantic spirit. He's a very godly man, and he's trustworthy. So I thought, I would like to stick with him. Why explore a new character when this one is so rich and fertile for me already? So we're going to travel. Mitford is now, we'll only know about Mitford through emails and cell phone. Father Tim's now carrying a cell phone.
Oh, hallelujah. Wow. Oh, golly.
So in the first book, Home to Holly Springs, he will go back to his birthplace. So he hasn't visited back there in years. He has no family left there, but he'll be given a gift that could cost him everything. It's going to be a great challenge. I cannot tell you how excited I am about this book and about the writing of it. I'm also going out to visit Holly Springs and research it very thoroughly.
Wow. Well, you know, Jan, just coincidentally, you know, we're talking in Chapel Hill, and there's a great Mississippi group of people in Chapel Hill.
Really?
We call them expatriates.
Oh.
Everybody, you know, Elizabeth Spencer, the great novelist, whose wonderful Light in the Piazza is now on Broadway, wonderful story about North Carolina people in Italy, is a Mississippian by birth and really orientation, but she has adopted, and North and Chapel Hill has adopted her. And so Jim C., I could go on and on about Mississippi people, and they are wonderful. They're just great folks to live, as long as we can keep them in North Carolina. So we'll be looking. I mean, there'll be a natural kind of connective link with some of your fans here in Chapel Hill because of that North Carolina-Mississippi connection in this this father. Now, the can't call it the Mitford book, but the first Father Tim book outside the Mitford series.
Yes. And I hope that if there's anyone there tonight from Mississippi that you'll please make it a point to come through the line and say hello.
Oh, great. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jan, can you mentioned that you're working on this new Father Tim novel, and it gives me the opportunity to ask something I'm real curious about, and that is about how you work. I've gotten a clue about this because you're working not only all the time writing, but in service to your fans. You're writing newsletters, and you're writing
We have a
copy and websites.
A website that I'm very pretty much connected to. Also, I write fresh material for that on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was real interested in, well, first of all, let me not let you get away with not answering this. How do you do it? I mean, how do you establish a work schedule that permits you to work on the current book, to promote the last book, to service your clients by writing a fresh newsletter? Only somebody who'd been in advertising and could just churn the words out would be able to do this.
Advertising helped me more than I can ever say. I didn't really love that business because it's a pretty brutal business,
right,
all things considered.
Right.
But I was in it for many, many years. And, you know, God never wastes anything. That's such an important thought to hold. God never wastes anything. All those years and all those hours that I thought my gift was being sort of thrown to the wind, no, indeed, I learned so much. It helped me learn how to write books, as a matter of fact, and it helped me market my books. I love, you know, once I work as hard as I work to write the best book I can possibly write, I like to go out and sell it.
I thought about this, Nick, and you say you like these agricultural analogies, but
I do.
But I know some people who've written some very fine books, but they do not enjoy promoting their works. And so to some extent, there's some fine work on the shelf that could have been very popular had the author or somebody really known how to promote it.
Well, it's a very difficult climate out there in today's book world. First of all, book sales have been off now for a couple or 3 years. It's slowed down considerably. I don't know why, and I'm sure they'll come back up again. But it really helps for an author to go out there and greet his or her readership. I really enjoy going out there. I wish there were two of me so one could stay home and write, and the other one could go out and meet my fans. They're wonderful people.
Well, you know, we have this farmer's market in Chapel Hill, Carrboro. I guess I have to say it's in Carrboro. And it's really great because the local farmers come in and bring their fresh products, and it's wonderful. But and some are very shy, and they just kind of have their great products, and they just kind of sit there behind and don't do anything. And then there's some other farmers who are so excited about seeing people, and they learn what people like, and so they greet people, and they're enthusiastic about their products and the people who buy them, and they're the ones who are more successful because they convey their love for what they're doing.
Excuse excuse me, please, there's no shame in being proud of what you do, especially when God is the one who has given you the very precious freedom and ability to do it.
Well, listen, we've enjoyed talking to you so much, Jan Karen, about your career, your connections to North Carolina, the wonderful new book, Light from Heaven, which is the last of the Mitford series, and a preview of the first of the next series about Father Tim. I hope everybody who's listening will stop what they're doing and run over to the McKimmon Center tonight.
Speaking of being enthusiastic, you are wonderfully enthusiastic also, and I appreciate your support of Mitford. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed our visit.
It's been great. Thanks, Jan Karen.
See you tonight.
See ya.